We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. Meditation matters. I hope to make the case that it's not navel-gazing narcissism while the world is burning. In fact, meditation matters precisely because history is inviting us to change history. I won't get to this part until next week, so let me front-load a little bit of the why. Meditation helps us be our most uncompulsed selves. In crisis, it compulses us. Meditation helps us be our most open to new possibility selves. And right now, history is demanding new possibilities. Meditation helps us be our listen more, react less selves. Also critical. So when do we need to more be our best selves than when history is inviting us to change history? So bottom line for this week and next, steady in our practice of meditation. Steady in our practice of meditation. But I suspect you already think that would be a good idea, and yet many a slip between the lip and the cup. So, some context. Hopefully context to inspire and some practical tips to help us succeed. Context this week, practical tips next. So for the context, let's think a bit about this crisis moment. If we're going to be people of our time, and if we're going to bring our best selves to our time, what is our time? Well, obviously it's a virus. Yes, it is. It is social unrest. Yes, it is. It's a growing coalition of people no longer willing to tolerate the hidden systems that keep perpetuating the same cycle, generation after generation, of white people ending up with the long end of the stick and people of color ending up with the short end. So yes, it's a pandemic. And yes, it's rising insistence on racial equity. But you may not be surprised, it is also a thing under the thing. Because below both the pandemic and our collective resolve to unravel racial inequity, we have brains, and we have emotions, and we have habits and social norms and relationships. I put up a link in the live stream to a Jackson Browne song, Standing in the Breach. It says that the change that we need, it really is resident in each of us. But the resistance that we face accessing that, it is a very real problem. He sings, the unpaid debts of history, the open wounds of time, and for our lesson today, the laws of human nature that are always tugging us from behind. Before the simple truth that Black Lives Matter grabbed our national attention, the virus was already clearing away the fog. We were already seeing more clearly how our society works for some people, but not for others. And in particular, how some of us have access to healthiness and others do not. Some of us have access to doctors and medicine and healthy food and housing and transportation and working systems that afford us lifestyles of manageable stress in our bodies and in our minds and in our families, and others do not. A whole catalog of social systems that for so long have been clouded under the fog of politics or ideological blood sport, but they're now being unshrouded. They have now been made very clear. The have-not systems in our society are often hidden away from our everyday awareness, but the pandemic put them right into our line of sight. Shrouded social systems show up in human bodies, and in particular, we've seen them showing up as pre-existing conditions. Hidden social systems are killing some of us in very large numbers and others in very small numbers. Pre-existing health conditions caused by everything from housing to employment to health care, in this moment of clarity, we are seeing those systems show up in human bodies. So we can't but see how Our communities are organized for large numbers of us to thrive, but also large numbers of us to not. And in the not category, mostly black and brown people, and native people, and rural people, and service workers. And all of this before we saw these most recent videos of black people being killed. History is sitting us down sternly, waving a finger and insisting, don't miss this moment. When we did see those videos, history became even more insistent, especially for us white people. Don't miss this moment. Our society is different for people of color. Sure, it makes us uncomfortable to see that, and when we get uncomfortable, we get defensive. And we argue and we justify, but history insists, stop that. Quit being so emotionally fragile. Quit withdrawing. Go ahead and feel the bad feelings, but don't miss this moment. I said last week, if this was easy, it'd be done by now. Because a whole lot of smart people, devoted people, hardworking people, spiritual people, insightful people, they've been showing up to do this work for a long time. Their work is why we are where we are even now, but still, we are where we are. Even now. If this was easy, it would be done by now. And so what makes this moment so not easy? One of the big things is the laws of human nature tugging from behind. We hear a lot about institutional racism lately. It's a way of talking about systems, shared unspoken habits, shared unspoken behaviors that are embodied in institutional policies, embodied in institutional memory, things that keep generation after generation the stick's long end and the stick's short end firmly in place. And those systems are rooted in human instinct and habit and thinking and emotion, all of which gets embedded into the everyday ways that we do society, usually unthinkingly, often below the level of willful intent, instincts that drive simple things, just like how we do business, how we build our houses and how we shop for food and how we get to work and how we go to school. Those systems are there quietly, tenaciously, subtly, even hiddenly, creating and recreating and recreating another generation again. Healthy outcomes for some people and unhealthy outcomes for others. Now, because they're shrouded, the unfairness that they represent, it doesn't get pushed into our face every day, so it's easy to get distracted until a pandemic sits us down to talk. Until social rest sits us down to talk, don't miss this moment. What a gift this moment is, hidden things are now being revealed. Tacit things are now being made explicit. Don't close your eyes. Don't retreat back to comfortable oblivion. Don't miss this moment. Which is a gift. It really is. And it is also really uncomfortable. History changing can feel overwhelming, sure, but consider the alternative. The alternative is that we keep killing one another with pre-existing conditions or with a gun. Don't miss this moment. Now, as a community, we're a little bit prepared for this moment. Turns out some of the interior muscles you need to rethink religion also apply to rethinking society. It's easier to get your head around the toxicity of institutional racism if you've already had firsthand experience with the toxicity of institutional religion. So here's a helpful thing we learned when we were rethinking religion. When religious institutions are missing the mark, at best not helping, but more accurately actually doing harm, we can't just work on the institution. Lots of people have recognized that church has become toxic. So, lots of people are trying to fix church. But the problem isn't completely in church. The problem is in us. Institutions are what they are and do what they do because of the behaviors of people who make up the institutions. So then, of course, okay, then let's work on behaviors, yeah? Let's be better people. That should solve the problem. Except our behaviors are rooted in habits. Habitual thinking, habitual emotional reactions, core instincts, knee-jerk responses to stimuli, most of which happen below the level of conscious awareness. We don't even see ourselves believing what we believe or feeling what we feel. No, we just do our thoughts. We just do our feelings automatically, unaware that we're doing them. So, institutions, okay, work on behaviors. And behaviors, okay, work on compulsive thoughts and feelings. And thoughts and feelings, well, then work on the instincts. But instincts come from core stories that we tell ourselves, stories that tell us what to look for. And as we've seen so many times, we find what we look for. Stories that tell us how to feel about other people, how to feel about ourselves, stories that tell us how to think and how to act and how to react. And sure enough, we do what our stories tell us to do. Now, that's review for many of us. But as I said last week, all it took for my own meditation practice to get hijacked was a pandemic changing my work schedule. So I hope you see just from that little litany why meditation matters in a crisis. In a rare moment in which history invites us to change history, we need to go as deeply inside as we can. That's why we do service work and systems work and spirituality work. So, back to people of our time, back to an analysis of this time so we can be those people. Living in the society that we live in, we cannot but have been socialized by stories that paint white people one way and people of color another way. We cannot not have absorbed the thousands, the millions of messages that have bombarded us since we were born. Black people are more violent than white people. Black people are lazier than white people. Black fathers don't love their families the way white fathers do. Black people's crimes merit harsher sentences than white people's crimes do. Now, nobody says those things out loud anymore, but in a million ways, those messages get sent day in and day out, day in and day out, and we can't but have absorbed instincts and habituated thinking and habituated emotional responses. So, if institutions built on behavior and behaviors built on the unconscious thinking and feeling and believing and reacting, and if those things are rooted in our deep compulsive attachments to our core beliefs, core stories that we tell ourselves, meditation matters in a crisis. Meditation matters if we are going to join this moment in history and do our part changing the course of history. Stories matter. Here's an example of an unhelpful story we tell ourselves. We saw it in our Wednesday book club. Here's the story. A racist is a bad person doing bad things. Now, that doesn't sound like a bad story. We've seen pictures of bad people sicking dogs on teenagers. We've seen pictures of bad people chanting with tiki torches, bad people doing immoral things. That's racist. But as stories often do, this one lets us white people off the hook. It helps us not see how we benefit from the hidden systems that keep perpetuating the long and short end of the stick. It helps us tell us nice things about ourselves even as that's going on. I'm not immoral. I would never be mean like that. I'm innocent. Look, I have black friends. I treat everyone with respect. I'm not racist. Off the hook. And that's all it takes. A story that we tell ourselves, and then sure enough, our story begins to shape our collective thoughts and feelings, and then our actions and our reactions, then begins to inform what socially acceptable behaviors are, and eventually begins to shape our institutions and the systems that keep perpetuating inequity, And boy, do we white people get worked up when somebody points out how we are participants in these unjust systems and how we do benefit disproportionately. Because again, we got a story we tell ourselves. I'm innocent. I'm not racist. I'm not immoral. I would never do those bad things. I'm good. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of enlightened. As a matter of fact, if you say anything different, you don't know me. you really don't understand me. In fact, the problem is probably you and not me, because again, innocent. And with all of that going on in our minds, nevertheless, history sits us down sternly and says, don't miss this moment. Brain instincts notwithstanding, emotional responses notwithstanding, don't miss this moment. Now, every time we argue or minimize or insist on our innocence or play devil's advocate, every time we get offended, every time we pout or withdraw or wrestle back the upper emotional hand, what we're actually doing is bullying. We're making it so miserable for people of color or anyone who points out any blind spot, by God, they're never going to do that again. And then, phew, we can stop talking about how we do benefit from hidden systems. We spend so much energy on the I'm innocent story that we tell ourselves that we risk completely missing this moment. And don't miss it, history tells us. Now, if we don't meditate, if we don't disentangle ourselves from the compulsive power of the stories that we tell ourselves, the tragic consequence will be sidelining white people of good intent. Because a bad story becomes bad instincts and bad thoughts and bad feelings and actions and reactions, and we will generate a whole lot of energy, but we won't rise to the moment, stand in the breach. We won't, tikkun olam, be repairers of the world. So again, history is sitting us down and saying, here's what you could do. You could say thank you when someone points out white blindness. We are blind to so much, someone pointing it out is a gift. But we won't be given that gift if we make it a living hell for anyone who dares to give it to us. And so history insists you could rise to the emotional challenge. You could hear the message no matter how it's delivered. You could insist of yourself, focus on the message, not how it makes you feel. We could do the work and dig in and challenge ourselves, our assumptions and our comfort instincts. We could minimize our defensiveness and make ourselves more curious and more open-hearted and more vulnerable, more listener-learner and less self-protective. We could stretch ourselves and allow our inner narratives to be interrupted. We could be more emotionally mature. History. What a demanding parent, right? History, so stern, so harsh. My kids were a little bit lucky. Their dad got a little stern from time to time, don't miss this moment. But their mom was considerably softer and gentler. It was a good balance for them. And fortunately for us, we also have a softer, more comforting parent. Stern, stern history. But waiting for us after history gives us a talking to is the perennial spiritual tradition. Oh, honey, it says to us, yeah, this is hard. I know, I know. History can be so stern, I know. But honey, this really is important. You really can't miss this moment. So come here. Let me help you, sweetie. Let me show you how to meditate. I'm going to help you do exactly what history is demanding of you. Come on, honey, we can do this. Let me show you how. We can do this hard thing. We can detach from the stories that we tell ourselves. We can be emotionally aware and emotionally resilient. Come on, honey. We can be people of our time. And so, indwelling spirit, may it be so in us. And may we not miss this moment. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. If you're not in the directory, you may want to be because you get the finance reports if you are. And so Scott sent it out this week, and he said, we're holding steady. Our income was about $1,500 lower than budget, but so were our expenses. So thank you for caring for our community's financial well-being. And Scott finished up saying something I say all the time, spiritual community is a good place to invest. This spiritual community is a good place to invest our time and energy and love and the dollars it takes us to be financially healthy. Go to the donate button on our website, and you can find out how to do it right there. Four different ways to do that. And so, what are you thinking? what is stirring up in your heart. Jeet, start with what's showing up on the feed.
So Tony left a comment. He said, don't miss this moment. He says, how does one come out on the wrong side of history in light of systemic racism, blatant race splitting, and murder?
What was the word before murder? Splitting?
Splitting. Race splitting.
Racist splitting, like dividing people among themselves. Oh, okay. Well, kind of that was the point of the lesson. Here's how we don't miss it. We see what is so easy to not see. Now, here again, Tony, I'm talking primarily to white people. It's easy to get so focused on the non-pertinent things that are going on that we miss the really big issue. We can get so caught up in trees we missed forest. So how do you not see when everything inside of our brains militates against change? Everything inside of our brains militates against seeing something that makes us have to acknowledge our own complicity. Complicity, is that the right word? Complicity? What is that word? Complicitness. There you go. How do we not do that? We become self-aware. We work the circle. The reason why we talk about the spirituality wing is there is work to do. There is service work to do. There is systems work to do. And we can get hijacked before we even get there by a bunch of stories that we tell ourselves if we don't do the spirituality work that allows us to see the big picture, to see what's really going on, to see the point. And so we practice community, trying to find our way forward, the communal practices. We practice the contemplative practices. Did I mention meditation today? We keep learning so that we can see stories or hear stories that we don't normally hear, and we keep serving and giving ourselves in service to service work and to systems work. We keep working the circle. We become spiritual people so that we can bring our best selves, and our best selves are non-blinded selves. There are a host of forces lined up to keep blinding us. And spirituality is saying, come on, honey, you can see. Yeah, it's hard. You do have the yeah, but response. Oh, boy, you do kick in with those defensive strategies. But come on, honey, you can see. You can keep seeing what you hadn't seen. So I think, Tony, the thing that we do is we work spirituality so that we don't miss this moment. What else?
So, Jack Fellow.
Hey, Jack, all the way from England.
Comment that says, hidden systems, how many do we influence? And if we recognize them, how can we start the change process?
Hidden systems, how do we recognize them? First of all, how many are there? How many do we influence? This is where I wish we were all in the same room, because what I'd do now is open the floor and say, what do you think about Jack's question? So here's the thing that we just saw. Let me back up. Here's one I see. I'll tell you one I see. I see how housing systems and public education systems and job systems, how far it is for me to go to a grocery store, how far it is for me to get to work, the things that I can do now in my house because of the kind of work that I do, the way that I work, in many ways wrapped up in being the part of the participant in privilege. I see how those systems negatively impact stress levels in other people, and I see how much stress I do not have. And so I think I'll go to Jack's part about influence. This is why One Wake is such a godsend for us, because for an individual to take on systemic change, how does an individual do that? When I say here now, small, doable, I'm talking about you and me having a part that is here now, small, doable. I'm not saying the work before us is small. The work before us is enormous. But the power of relationship is now there are many of us. And when many of us pull together in the same direction to mitigate the pain of a few, we highlight, what is your pain? Oh, your pain is housing? okay, let's talk about affordable housing. Let's talk about policies that we can begin to implement with affordable housing. Oh, your pain has to do with education? Well, let's talk about policies that we can change around education. Oh, your pain is that you can't get a living wage job and there's no house that you can afford to live in Wake County and you have to move all the way out to Timbuktu and now you don't have time to get to work. Okay, let's talk about transportation systems and let's talk about living wage job systems and let's begin to lobby those who make those kinds of decisions. One Wake is such a godsend to us because it answers that question. Here's where we get to influence. We get to influence by changing the systems that drive the pain that hurt people in disproportionate ways. Now, here's the thing. We started off on moving into One Wake, and I cannot tell you how much emotional backlash I heard. Oh, my God, somebody's going to force liberalism down me. Or, oh, my God, somebody's going to hurt my feelings. Or, oh, my God, I'm going to have to do this or I'm going to have to do that. And wait a minute, what about a policy that I don't believe in? Everybody wants to push back. So we do spirituality work so we can get into systems work. We can get involved in systems work. So I don't know. Those are some meandering thoughts. Thanks, Jack. Looks like we have time for one more.
All right. So let's see. Katie made a comment. She mentions a book, Post-Traumatic Slave Disorder, by Dr. Joy DeGry. Points to the intergenerational trauma of slavery and racism.
Yeah.
She says, we're all affected by our generational roles in this racism.
Yeah. So I haven't read the book, but it sounds like a great book. But here, you can get this concept in your mind a whole lot easier just going to Wikipedia. And at Wikipedia, you look at what happened to the Dutch after World War II. And what happened in terms of those who were in places that faced starvation and stress, and what stress to their bodies did in them, but then also what happened in the children that were born to the next generation and the children that were born to the generation after that. How stress actually changed the epigenetics of life. Stress-related experiences, stress-related trauma affects us, but it also affects the DNA that we transmit. And so we look at people who've experienced 400 years of stress and we say, come on, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's not taking into account the whole picture, the whole story. We blind ourselves into thinking that, come on, I did it, you can do it too. But the reality is it's different for people. And stress-related trauma and the long-lasting impact that goes generationally after that, something we need to pay attention to. All right, well, head on over to What Are You Still Thinking? Because there's a lot to talk about, and I've heard those have been great. But if before you go, if you would, please put your hand on your heart, and let's remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. Life and love and goodness and truth, the fruit of the Spirit is within us because the indwelling Spirit is within us. And if you would, extend your other hand to our city, and let's look for opportunities to share what's in us with the people that we live with and work with, the people we go to school with, looking for opportunities to heal and repair our worlds. Amen. God bless you. Love each other as you go. Say hi to somebody again. Pick up the phone. Call them. See you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.